As human beings, we find great value in having regular increments in time. Whether it's 24 hours or 365 days, these periods of time provided by nature help us to organize our lives and mark the passage of time. As human beings, we are also spiritual creatures, and we value taking a critical look at our own past and reflecting on how we might improve in the future. For example, Rosh Hashanah, the Jewish New Year, is a very intentional time of looking at the previous year. It's a time of seeking and granting forgiveness. It's a time of recommitment to cherished values in the year to come. In the same way, the start of a calendar year provides a point in time for looking back as well as thinking about the coming year. This morning, I hope to do just that, with a little help from Buddhism and the following story. In 1995, the following radio transmissions between Americans and Canadians made the news. After detecting an impending collision, a U.S. warship sent the following message to the Canadians. Americans, divert your course 15 degrees to the north to avoid a collision. The Canadian response, recommend you divert your course 15 degrees to the south to avoid a collision. The Americans, this is the captain of a U.S. Navy ship. I say again, divert your course. The Canadians, negative. I say again, you divert your course. The Americans, and this was sent in all caps. This is the aircraft carrier Abraham Lincoln, the second largest ship in the United States Atlantic Fleet. I demand that you change your course 15 degrees north, that's 15 degrees north, or countermeasures will be undertaken to ensure the safety of this ship. The Canadian response, this is a lighthouse. Your call. We'll get to visit that story again in the sermon a little later. 3 years ago, I discovered a Buddhist teaching that I had not previously encountered, at least not in this form. It is called the three poisons, or the three unwholesome roots, which in Buddhist teachings are said to be the source of human suffering. This morning, I would like to see what they might offer us as we reflect on the past year and make plans for the new. According to Buddhist teachings, the three poisons are ignorance, greed, and anger. To speak about three poisons may seem somewhat harsh, but I believe it is essential to understand these traps of the human personality if we are to wisely cultivate their opposites, which thankfully Buddhism speaks to as well. Of the three poisons, ignorance clearly stands out as primary, because greed and anger, Buddhism teaches, flow out of ignorance. So what is meant by ignorance? In Buddhism, ignorance is associated with a misunderstanding of ourselves, more specifically, a misguided sense of ourselves as separate beings. We often have no sense or a diminished sense that we and other beings come from the same source. We have lost, if indeed we ever had it, an understanding that all beings are related, that everything that exists is interrelated. I love this teaching because it resonates so well with Unitarian Universalism's seventh principle, in which we affirm and promote respect for the interdependent web of all existence of which we are a part. What I have come to believe about our interdependence is that even if we understand our interrelatedness with our intellects, it is much more difficult to understand it with our hearts, and it is more difficult still to demonstrate it through our actions. I believe Buddhism would say, we live much of our lives in ignorance, living quite independently as if we have no impact, no care, and no concern for the rest of the web of life. In the story with which I started, the U.S. Navy captain was certainly not ignorant of lighthouses, And he knew full well the consequences of his ship colliding with a lighthouse. But in his day-to-day duties, he likely gave little thought beyond the immediate needs of his ship unless forced to do so. In his daily tasks, he operated as if the world revolved around his ship and its needs. Buddhism might say he had an elevated sense of self. How does any of this relate to the rest of us? Just like the ship's captain, I think we have an intellectual understanding of our interrelatedness with the web of life. But Buddhism encourages us to make this interrelatedness alive in our hearts and in our day-to-day decisions. Like the Navy captain, perhaps we are too focused on our immediate needs and desires rather than on the needs of others. If ignorance is the first poison, Buddhism teaches that that awareness is the remedy or antidote. I see this awareness of deeply lived interrelatedness as a spiritual opportunity. And by that I mean the opportunity to live our lives day by day, moment by moment, fully aware of our interdependence, fully aware of how our decisions and choices affect the web of life, keenly in tune with how our actions impact all that exists, an opportunity to be deeply appreciative of how our lives are enriched by so much beyond ourselves. I believe the starting place for such awareness is gratitude. Just imagine pausing daily at meals or at the beginning or end of each day can bring a spirit of deeper awareness into our lives. Imagine taking each day to reflect in a few sentences or for a couple of minutes to bring our full attention on how we benefit from the web of life. Our reading this morning, meditation, that reading, that opening, that meditation, number 598, could be also be used. I can think of no better spiritual practice. Let me offer an example of where I believe we need greater awareness through our actions. The example that is alive in my heart is the treatment, or rather, the mistreatment of animals. I suspect that most of us are aware of factory farming and how animals are treated cruelly for the sole purpose of providing less expensive food for us. But do we live with this awareness? Do our actions reflect this awareness? To fully live this awareness, I believe, is to foster a change in our day-to-day habits, eating less meat or no meat or other animal products. This will not only benefit animals, but also our own health and the health of the planet. Buddhism invites us to practice greater awareness in our hearts and through our actions in the year ahead. Another way to deepen our awareness is by looking at Buddhism's second poison, greed. Again, Buddhism's teaching is clear that greed is based largely on ignorance, on an ego that focuses primarily on us, and as before, an ignorance of our interdependence. Greed most often speaks to material accumulation, to the misguided belief that our happiness is found in external things. And in our culture, our purchases consistently demonstrate that we place the self first, often to the detriment of others. Said another way, I want to suggest that the things that we buy and the quantity of things we buy have an impact on other people, on other sentient beings, and on this beautiful earth we share, and that we don't fully grasp this impact in our hearts or through our actions. I also believe there is non-material greed. I offer, for example, the privilege many of us have in our lives. We may not be actively accumulating privilege, and yet we seem unable to divest ourselves and bring greater equity to others in our communities. I also believe that non-material greed is reflected, for example, in the misguided game of I'm right and you're wrong, or that my point of view is the one that matters most. As human beings, we are deeply attached to our own points of view rather than trying to understand the ideas and needs of others. If greed is the poison, the remedy or antidote, says Buddhism, is generosity. And I would add generosity of spirit. When I think of addressing material greed, in addition to buying fewer things, I think of spending money in ways that not only meet my needs, but also meet the needs of others. For some and perhaps many, even in this congregation, there is an effort to spend money not at the outposts of large multinational corporations where profits leave the local community, but to instead use smaller local vendors, thus serving our neighbors as well. Kwanzaa ended 6 days ago. And how appropriate that not patronizing large multinational corporations is very much in tune with the fourth principle of Kwanzaa, Ujamaa, or cooperative economics, the goal of which is to build and maintain our stores, shops, and other businesses, and to profit from them together. Like greed, generosity is not always material. Right now, as Unitarian Universalist, through groups like Black Lives Matter, we are being asked to work vigorously and generously to dismantle the prevailing privilege for the few and to work for justice for all. I also value generosity in one-on-one interactions. In 2015, I found myself the beneficiary of a generous spirit in Mexico City. An elderly woman asked for my help crossing a busy street. I was pleased to say yes, and I thought it would be helpful if she took my arm. So I turned to her in Spanish and asked if she would like an abrazo. To my chagrin, instead of asking her if she would like to take my arm, I had asked her if she would like a hug. She did not need to correct my Spanish. She just very graciously, very generously took my arm, and we safely crossed the street together. Generosity can also be practiced whenever and wherever there is disagreement. As many of you know, I have a passion for nonviolent or compassionate communication. One of the key teachings of NVC is empathy. And the focus of empathy is that when there is disagreement or conflict, instead of playing the game of who's right and who's wrong, we are called to generously enter into the world of another person and to try to understand what is foremost on their hearts. Whether it's what we do or say or even think, Buddhism invites us to be more generous in the year ahead. Let us now turn our attention to the third poison, anger. I want to begin with a question for us to ponder. The question is, in what ways is anger a poison? If you will indulge me, and I suppose you don't have much choice, I would like to share from my personal experience with anger. First of all, I have found that my anger poisons my own mind and spirit. When I am angry, I can feel my body, including my mind, being taken over by my anger. It is often difficult to think or listen clearly or objectively, and I can become harsh, even mean-spirited, particularly in my thoughts. Like other poisons, anger is fueled by our perceived separateness, in which we don't fully grasp how our anger can hurt others. Sometimes our anger is directed at a clerk in a store, and sometimes it's directed at someone we care very much about. In either case, the effects can be toxic. Not that long ago, I needed to call a credit card company. You know this is not going to end well. It would be an understatement to say that my frustration was high. and I was so ready to lash out at the employee who was doing her best to help me. One thing I found most interesting is that we often blame our anger on others or on the situation we find ourselves in. But it's important to recognize that two people can react very differently to the same situation or stimulus. In other words, if we react angrily, it comes from within us. It does not come from the situation itself. What an incredible learning. I find that anger is a barrier to much needed healthy communication. As I have suggested, when we get angry, our minds are clouded by our anger. It is harder to listen, and we become defensive, aggressive, and even abusive. If anger is the poison, what then is the remedy? In Buddhist teachings, the remedy to anger is to cultivate compassion. I love the idea of cultivating compassion. It again speaks to spiritual practice. In addition to compassion, there are other words that I found quite helpful. A word we often hear expressed in Buddhist circles is loving kindness. When we are feeling anger or sensing anger of others, this, I believe, is when we most need to turn our attention to loving kindness for ourselves and for others. When I am feeling frustration, and for me, frustration is always a precursor to anger, if not anger itself, as quickly as I am able, I try to get clear about what is going on within me. And then I can bring my thoughts of loving kindness to myself and others. If I can do this successfully, and the operative word is if, my frustration quickly passes. I've already suggested that empathy can help us to better understand the needs of others, but let me take it a little further. In my work in nonviolent communication, empathy, like compassion, means never hearing a criticism from another person. How great would that be? But instead, trying to hear what another person is expressing, even if they are expressing it poorly, even if their words are directed angrily at you. An exercise in nonviolent communication workshops is to think of a person who is angry at you and to try to guess what need they are trying to express. This is hard work, and I am not often successful. But when we are able to achieve this, I believe we are living the life divine. Never hear a criticism, only hear an unmet need. Responding with loving kindness and empathy instead of with anger or hearing criticism can both become spiritual practices, which simply means changing our habitual ways of responding. It's responding with the heart, and the rewards are great. Giving up anger does not mean we give up our passion for justice, and it does not mean that we are not deeply saddened and dismayed by what troubles the world. If anything, the emotion, the passion we feel for a troubled world can be used to fuel that passion for the change we wish to see and be in the world, to quote Gandhi. Buddhism invites us to bring compassion and loving kindness into relationships with ourselves, in our social activism, in our relationships with others. As Unitarian Universalists, we will spend a lifetime trying to understand the human experience, trying to improve our awareness of who we are and how we are related to the web of life. As Unitarian Universalists, we may appear to be captains of our own ships, but we also know that we sail in a much larger sea. We know that any words we speak or any action we take will have one of two effects. Our words and actions will add to the meaning and quality of our interrelated life, or our words and actions will prop us up, serve primarily our needs, and take away from that interdependent life we want to uphold and affirm. As we enter a new year, may we seek to add meaning and quality of life for all, because in this life we share, when we choose to act on behalf of all, we are at the same time choosing life for ourselves. May it be so.